It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
The 28th episode of Wayne's Comics. Thanks for listening. This week we have an interview with Joe Harris, the creative mind behind good comics like Ghost Project and Spontaneous. He talks a little bit about both of those and gives some insight into the comics and how they came to be. I'll also be talking, of course, with Ian Cullen and Gianluca Glazer about news and previews, and I'll even get to take a look inside the local comic store. But first up, we're going to talk with Joe Harris, and since we're talking with Joe, you might actually hear some spooky music coming from Ghost Project or somebody who's burst into flame spontaneously. Listen in. Talking today with Joe Harris, one of the creative people behind Spontaneous, which is out currently from Oni Press. How are you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Wayne.
I love the book. I think the book is something special, Spontaneous was. I first got exposed to it when it was out on New Comic Book Day.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a lot of fun. I'm glad you're able to get one. A lot of people couldn't get one.
Yeah, it was great. Of course, the first issue had a lot of that in there, so it was great stuff. But anyway, how long have you been reading comics? How did you get into comics?
Oh, man. I mean, I've been reading comics. I suppose everybody's probably got a similar story. I mean, I've been reading comics since pretty much I could read. I mean, I'd be going to the drugstore when I was a little kid and buying whatever I could find, going to, you know, the neighborhood comic book shop in Brooklyn where I grew up and you know, spending dimes on the cheapest back issue bin that I could find. Mm-hmm. You know, I always aspired to make comics. The way I got into comics is a little strange. I had gotten out of film school where I had made a short film that I was touring with. It was playing festivals, and it was what I had gotten out of my education. And now I was going to try and use this to get whatever it is came next for me as a storyteller. And I thought that this would lead directly to me making more films and working in that industry. When, as fate would have it, my friend at the time, he's still a dear friend of mine, Adam Polina, who had started drawing X-Force for Marvel, mm-hmm. had bought some of the editors from Marvel Comics at the time down to a screening that I had here in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And they really liked the short film that I had made. And afterwards, I struck up a conversation with some of them, and they said, you know, we like what you're doing. We like how you deal with young people. We think you should be working for us. And I was in my early 20s, and I ended up writing this, you know, myriad books at Marvel Comics at a time when Marvel was a pretty dysfunctional place. So there were a lot of opportunities and, you know, as well as a lot of pain to be had working in an atmosphere like that. Well, you know, the company was still in bankruptcy and there was, you know, a very cluttered vision for what the book should be. But in the middle of this stew, I got a lot of opportunities thrown my way, and I ended up writing a variety of books. I launched a Spider-Man spinoff title called Slingers that ran for about a year. And then I did an ongoing X book, Bishop the Last X-Man, that ran for a little bit longer than a year. And in between that, I did various miniseries and fill-ins and annuals and stuff like that. You know, it's strange. After I had been there for about 2.5 years or so, and I had all this time been itching to make another short film, which I had not done since school. Mm-hmm. And so I had this idea for a new short called The Tooth Fairy that, by another strange odyssey, ended up being the first screenplay I ever sold to Hollywood. And I ended up making this sort of lateral move into writing horror movies. Mm-hmm. Did that pretty much exclusively for a few years. And then I decided that, one, I got a little tired of being a gun for hire in terms of being a Hollywood screenwriter and kind of pursuing the soulless task of trying to get hired on a job on, you know, bad horror movie sequel X or crappy horror movie remake Y. And I really missed working in comics. So now I'm pursuing a couple of tracks at once. And I realized what I missed was really creating original content and properties, which is how I've had the most fun and the most success is when I really stuck my neck out to create something new and original. And I wanted to get into doing creator-owned books and sort of see if I could play these two pursuits against one another to a good end. And so far, it's been a lot of fun, very gratifying. I'm more proud of the work I'm doing in comics now than I could ever say that I was when I was really learning how to do this without a manual back in the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's my story in 5 minutes or less. It's just sort of roundabout and comes in from a few strange angles, but that's the gist of it.
Well, why don't we talk about the book that I know the least about that you've done? It's called The Hashishian?
The Hashishian, yes.
Is that how it's pronounced? Hashishian. Okay, I wondered.
It is. The Hashishian is a graphic novel. We've actually been working on it for a while, but we're making a push to get it finished now, actually. It's going to be published by Oni Press. Mm-hmm. And I'm working with an artist called Trevor McCarthy, who you may have seen most recently drawing the Gates of Gotham miniseries for DC.
Oh, mm-hmm.
It's essentially, the best way I could describe this to you is the way that I pitched it to Oni. It's essentially Harold and Kumar meets the Bourne Identity. And it's really based in this mythology. The word assassin comes from the word Hashishian. And the Hashishian were this radical sect at the time of the Crusades who would be sent out by a very charismatic leader to go commit political killings, assassinations. And the way that they were cajoled into doing this was that they were given hashish. So essentially they were gotten pretty much stoned out of their minds and they were sent out to do their master's bidding. Huh. And I've always been interested in this in this subject matter because, one, the historical nature of it is interesting. I find the Crusades very interesting. But I also have an affinity for pot-smoking movies. I love Cheech and Chong. As a genre, I've always found it very funny and vibrant. I love Pineapple Express and Your Highness and all the modern iterations of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that the stoner audience is a little underserved in the comic book industry. It's just a hunch that I've had. Other than, say, Kevin Smith, I haven't seen much out there that really speaks to that. So we came up with this concept for the Hashishian. Rather than go straight historical, what essentially it's about is a couple of slackers living in Brooklyn come across this, essentially what amounts to a magical bag of marijuana that happens to belong to one of these characters, a 12th century assassin who has inexplicably, they'll find out later what led to this, come to this time and they have his stash. And he's hunting them for it. And over the course of this pursuit, they discover what may or may not be a plot by this organization to assassinate the president of the United States. The only problem is these guys are way too unserious to be taken seriously by the powers that be. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the setup. And within it are these, whenever they partake of these of these found gains that they've acquired, they have these vivid flashbacks that kind of transport them back to the time of the Crusades and learn a bit about what this organization was, and they learn some information that informs what they're actually encountering in the present day. And if we do our job right, it'll be action packed, it'll be really funny, a little bit audacious, and a lot of fun. I'm having a blast on it. It's one of the first things I actually pitched on ePress, and I know we're all pretty excited about it.
Great. I'll keep my eye out for that because I like that. Now, let's talk to the one that – this is what really introduced me to your writing, and I've caught up on a couple of things. And I didn't realize you had written some of the Batman stuff, like the Man-Bat for the Battle of the Cowl and Scarecrow.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff, which I really liked. But Ghost Project to me was the one that really is when I recognized that you were the one writing all these things. Do you want to talk a little bit about Ghost Project?
Sure. Ghost Project is something I had been kicking around for a while. I had originally considered trying to set it up as a film somewhere. I guess the idea first came to me not that long after September 11th, just because there was all this talk about the need to secure potential loose WMD components that might have been rattling around in some of the dark corners of the world, like the former Soviet republics, where you know, we know that there are canisters of things like anthrax and radiological materials, as well as poisonous materials that aren't really cataloged very well and aren't very secure. So there was a lot of talk in the media about United States governmental actions that we were actively pursuing, in which we would partner with former Soviet republics to kind of get in there and see what you have so that we can secure it against what was very much a burgeoning black market at the time in these materials. That sort of setup got me thinking about, you know, what might, during the Cold War, when everything was poured into research and development for how East and West could annihilate one another, even though it never really happened, what lengths might this obsession have gone to? And I love genre, and I love horror is what I like to do. And as I was putting this together, I was working on what would become my first movie that came out from Sony at the time. And I was generating a lot of new horror ideas to try and build into pitches or try to set it up as a project someplace or another. And along the way there, I hooked up with Steve Ralston, and I knew him from a few years back, and I always liked what he did very much. I loved what he did on Queen and Country, and that got him a lot of notice at the time when he was first published by Oni Press. Mm-hmm. When I was really looking to get back into comics, making, you know, again, this sort of sideways move a couple of years ago, I went to Steve with this, and we had talked about it a little bit in the past, and I said, let's do this now. Let's, you know, see who our contacts are. I think you're the person to do this with me. Let's try and find the right home for it. And Oni was very excited about it when I pitched it to them. Mm-hmm. And that's how Ghost Project sort of came about.
It's such an interesting story for me. It's part spy, part mystery, part horror. It's got all kinds of different things going on, which one of the things that made the book leap out at me very much. I bought the hardcover when it came out with the glow-in-the-dark cover on it, you know, because I like that so much. And every once in a while, I wake up in the middle of the night and I see the glow-in-the-dark, and I go, I got to read that book again.
You should really see my kitchen when I walk past the palette of them stacked like a... You know, I've got a few stacks in the kitchen. It looks like uranium in the corner sometimes at night. So the response on the packaging has been very gratifying. I mean, I love the way it glows in the dark.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that you got a lot of attention for Ghost Project. You received, what, a couple of awards that I know of.
Wizard named us the best, I guess, you know, Wizard's final awards for 2010 named us the best miniseries of the year. Mm-hmm. I know we were just nominated for something, but I'm not allowed to talk about what it is.
Well, Any Cool News said that it was one of the finest miniseries of 2010.
Yes, they did.
It's hard for miniseries that are not in the big two to mm-hmm. be able to get attention. And I was really gratified to see that your miniseries, which I thought was really unique, got this attention. And I was very happy to see that.
Well, thank you for saying that. I was very happy to see it too. You know, when you get into this, you understand that the reality of this business, the way comic books are made, who buys them, the way we sell them, it is, like you say, it's just very hard for something small to break through. And every little ray of sunshine is nice. So thank you. It felt good to get that. It was nice. Okay. Thank you.
There's one other bit of news about Ghost Project before we get on to Spontaneous, is that now I understand it's been picked up by Sci-Fi to be turned into – now I don't exactly know what it's being turned into. Is it being turned into a series of programs?
Well, the idea is – yeah. I mean, Sci-Fi picked it up, and the idea is to let the comics – let the 5-issue initial miniseries serve as the big pilot 2-hour special that would launch the ongoing television series based on this concept. And that's the I've had some very, very initial talks with a few people about the direction this should go in and with the way it's looking. And I understand everybody's very excited about it. And I wish I could share more. I'm not even being coy or secretive about it. It's just coming together all at once, both very fast and very slow. Yeah, I'm just waiting to hear more as well, but I know that everybody's very excited about it. I've heard from a few different channels that that's the case, and I'm as eager as you are to see what happens next.
Well, I always tell people, don't say anything to me that would get you in trouble. That's the last thing I want. I want to know. Tell me what you can, but don't get anything. I don't want to mess anything up.
I tell myself all the time, don't say anything that can get you in trouble, but it's, you know, sometimes it doesn't work.
Okay. Well, I'm anxious for that, you know, because it's interesting because the Sixth Gun was picked up at around the same time.
Right.
And I didn't even, you know, all the press releases focused on that, and I like the Sixth Gun, don't get me wrong with that, but I didn't hear until recently about Ghost Project. I felt a little sorry that it didn't get more press than it did, but...
Well, it kind of got buried in the crush of Comic-Con media. And it wasn't by design. I mean, it was more a matter of waiting for all the T's to be crossed and I's to be dotted before people were actually safe to say anything and you weren't in danger of the rug being pulled out from under you. Like, mm-hmm. you follow me? So, I mean, as can sometimes happen when people get excited and speak before they should, and then they have to explain why, in fact, it didn't work out the way they'd hoped. And so it was a sort of a confluence of that, of us waiting for it to be, you know, crystal clear. And I think the same thing was happening with the Six Gun, in that we didn't have a solid okay that we could talk about it. And meanwhile, Comic-Con was happening, and, you know, we wanted to get the news out for Comic-Con. And by the time we did, it was, you just kind of get lost under the crush of, you know, what's going on in Joss Whedon's Avengers, or... you know, what other news is breaking in Hall H? It's, you know, I mean, you see how it is. It's such a media dump, that place. That,
yeah. You know, people who are outside, because I was there, too, and I got your autograph there, too. Your first two books of Spontaneous, I got your autograph.
That. Thank you, sir.
There I was in the middle of Comic-Con, and people outside of Comic-Con knew better what was going on as far as news releases and things than I did. Because mm-hmm. you're too busy walking around and trying to get places and trying to do things during Comic-Con. So it's really tough. So I'm not surprised that that happened. But I'm glad the word's getting out about it, though.
Yeah, well, that's nice. Thank you.
Now, let's talk about Spontaneous. As we mentioned sure. a little bit about it, it started in Free Comic Book Day, and I think it got off to a nice start because there was a lot of word of mouth that I heard that people were anxious to see this series. So that's always a good thing.
That's nice to hear. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And the thing that's interesting is the art style is very different from Ghost Project. This is a totally different feel. And the story, I have to – the first thing I do want to ask, though, is where did the story come from? People spontaneously bursting into flame. Where did that idea come from?
Well, I've always been fascinated by the concept of the phenomenon that some would argue is real, many would argue is not, because it's really not been verified scientifically. The concept of spontaneous human combustion, it's fascinated me since I was a little boy. And I think there was an episode of That's Incredible that did a segment on it. That might have been my first exposure to it. And the idea that somebody, for unknown reasons, could begin to burn from the inside out. And as I began thinking about, you know, I always wanted to return to this concept and do something with it. And I remember once I was, so a few years back, I was rolling this idea around in my head. What can I build around this concept of SHC? Mm-hmm. My head started isolating the first word in the term, spontaneous. And all I thought was, that sounds like the greatest Alfred Hitchcock movie that was never made. The title alone was just got me so jazzed once I hit on that. It sounds like, you know, it should star Cary Grant and Eva Marie Saint, and they should be running from some international conspiracy or something. and from there, I started to put it together. And as I was thinking about what this concept would be about, this young guy who's sort of chasing the phenomenon and trying to determine where it's going to strike next and who might be the next victim. It's so random, it's portrayed, if real at all. And he's determined to prove that it isn't. And we learn the reason why is because he lost his father when he was very young to this very phenomenon. And as I started playing with this concept, I realized, you know, I really wanted to make this about young adults, you know, 20 years old or so, stick it in a very average suburban place and really peel back the top layer to show how unidyllic it really is underneath. And all those elements just sort of came together for me. So, you know, I really enjoy things like the movie Brick and Veronica Mars on television. And taking this horror slash weird sci-fi concept and grafting it to that paradigm where you've got these young investigators going out to get to the bottom of something just really lit up for me. And that's really how it came together. And then Oni had put Brett Weldelay, the artist, and I together because they thought it would be a good fit. And when I saw Brett's stuff, what I really enjoyed about it is that he brought this this abstract feel to things that at these really key moments really delivered a big visual punch. And it was just really good casting because for me, when I'm looking to pair with somebody, I like who brings something to the project that I didn't envision could be there. You know, what am I going to get back that surprises me and inspires me going forward? And, you know, because it left to my own devices, I think I've got the entire thing fully realized. Mm-hmm. And I can sit down and I can tell you how I want this to look and what I, you know, what I'm looking for in this page. But it's so much more exciting to for the collaborative process to get something back that really goes in another direction and hits most of the notes I was looking for, but introduces me to so many I never considered. I mean, that's the long and the short of spontaneous and how it came together.
You answered both my questions. The commenting about the art, one of the things I really liked was the fact that when somebody bursts into flame, it's a very – you almost can feel the heat from his artwork, which I think is really spectacular. As far as the characters go, the thing you have to understand and I love this about a book when it raises a good question is how would one react if this something like this strange and unusual happened in your community? I mean, how would you respond to that? And that's what this book is really – really asking, you know, as much as it's solving the mystery of why do people burst into spontaneous combustion, how would you as a community respond to this kind of thing? And I like that.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, I take it a step further. The characters who are really wrestling with this are generally quite isolated. Mm-hmm. They've got this essentially this huge thing that they've got to get to the bottom of. And, you know, in reality, especially our protagonist, Melvin, he doesn't talk to anybody. I mean, he's very much an outcast, very much sticking to the shadows, not trusting people, not one to build many strong and good relationships with people. So he's sort of sitting there and wrestling with this thing all by himself when this very brash, more socially outward investigative reporter, Emily, crosses paths with him. Mm-hmm. You know, now it starts to open up a little bit, and I don't think they as a team or he specifically as an individual knows really what to do. So it's as much a story about that and determining how am I responsible with what I suspect? What's required of me if I think that something this dangerous is happening? Is my personal quest to prove that it exists more important than the safety and health of an innocent person who I suspect is going to be next? Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff sort of gets thrown around in the hopper. But we really did go for this feel that this could have been any suburban town, USA, you know, scenes, you know, the shopping mall food court, you know, there's some stuff that takes place on Main Street in this little town at some point that I think is pretty cookie cutter. And I don't mean that in a bland way. I just meant we really went for something that I think is accessible to a lot of people based on where we all grew up.
No, I'm riveted. I mean, the thing that I enjoy about it is it's deeper than many comics are. There's lots of layers going on. Things will start to happen and you kind of look at them and you go like, well, why is that now happening? And the thing I love to do is to sit and think about stuff. And this raises questions and it's such an interesting mystery that I'm just dying to get to see when we get to the last issue. This interview will come out when the fourth issue is out. And it should be come out that. So it'll be right down until five will be the end of the series. Is there anything you want to let us know? I mean, don't spoil too much. I don't want to know too much ahead of time. But
yeah, no, I don't want to spoil anything for you. Okay. I will say that the fourth issue is a doozy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I almost I'm hesitant to give you too many cues other than I'd like to think that some pretty shocking stuff happens.
Good. There's nothing better than a good surprise. So don't spoil it for me or for anybody else. Because I like it very much. Plans for this to come in the trade? Or is this a chance that this could possibly, it looks to me like this could come in a movie. I mean, if Sci-Fi is after Ghost Project,
well,
somebody else
I mean,
go after Spunky?
No, I don't remember what I said about not wanting to talk out of
school. Okay. All right. Well, we'll take this little part out then.
All I will say is there has been interest and it has been very gratifying.
Okay.
And stay tuned.
Okay. That's good for me. Trade paperback?
There are definite plans to collect this in the future. Yes, but you know, again, please buy issue 4 and 5. It keeps us all in room and board.
Okay, well, that's good, because I'll buy the hardcover if it comes out in hardcover, and I don't know what you'll do. Instead of a glow-in-the-dark cover, I'm not sure what you would do.
You know, but we've had this conversation, and I have to be honest with you. I sort of demanded of the production team, who are all immensely talented and knock themselves out on these books day in and day out. I told Pony Press that, you know, we glowed in the dark for Ghost Project. I demand that the collection of spontaneous burst into flames. So we'll see if ambition can meet technology and possibly we'll see how that works.
Okay, well, what we can do is, if we get a dark in the room, I can hold up the hardcover of Spontaneous and see what's going on.
You may only get to read it once.
I think the demand would continue on then, because every time I burst into flame, I got to go and buy another one.
I hope so. Or the lawsuits, you know, by the way. So.
Okay. Are there other projects that you're working on, since Spontaneous is going to come to an end very shortly? Other things that you're working on that you'd like people to know about?
Well, you know, I can give you the standard. I really can't say that much right now. What can I tell you? I have a graphic novel in the works, again, published by Oni Press, that Adam Polina and I have created, that will hopefully be out late next year. Mm-hmm. And it's going to look stupendous. Mm-hmm. What else am I doing? I have a series at Image that's in the works, but I really can't get too much into at the moment. We're putting it together now, and hopefully we'll have an announcement later this year. Mm-hmm. And I also have I'm very stingy with the details, but I have also a book at DC Comics that I created with Ethan Van Sciver, that we've been working on for a while, and hopefully you will hear more details about in the coming months.
You put something on your blog about a project called Great Pacific, and that fascinates me.
That's the Image thing that I'm discussing. I put up that teaser because I was very excited. Mm-hmm. You know, again, without going into details, you might be able to decipher what the subject matter is from the picture and the title. But all I'll say is that it's a sci-fi adventure wrapped around an environmental catastrophe.
Okay.
And I'm very excited to get that out there. And hopefully you'll be hearing about that very soon, because we've been knocking ourselves out on it and it looks spectacular.
Oh, I like the picture. It looks really good. It's very mysterious. We don't know quite what's going on, and nothing's better than being a good mystery. So I'm already looking forward to it.
Great. Well, thanks for the call out on it. I appreciate that.
If something's really good, I like to be able to promote it. And I really enjoyed all your work. So I'm very happy with all those things. One of your movies is coming to Blu-ray is Darkness Falls, right?
Yes.
I thought we'd give that a push as well.
Yeah, that comes out in October. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be out on Blu-ray, which is nice, seeing how nobody buys DVDs anymore. I'm excited to see the transfer. I actually haven't watched the movie in some time, so I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to be doing commentary on while the movie's playing?
I actually did there's a commentary track that I participated in that came out on the DVD, which as far as I know is going to be put on the Blu-ray as well. Okay. I can't confirm that. I don't have those specs in front of me, but I would assume it would be.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I'll at least look into it and see what's going on with that. But the thing we need to do is look for the name Joe Harris, and I'll get some interesting reading. I know that for sure.
I hope so. Thank you.
I appreciate that. I loved, like I said, Ghost Project really got my attention. Spontaneous, just for the moment I saw a Free Comic Book Day, I knew I was going to go after that with bells on, because I really liked the concept.
I'm glad you got one.
Yeah, so I'll keep after it, and I'll be looking forward to the other stuff. And it was good talking with you tonight, Joe. Thank you very much.
Good talking with you as well, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, take care.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast at sfpnow.com so you can keep reading your comics.
Okay. Okay, now it's time for news and previews of the week. And with me, of course, as always, is Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, he says, swallowing some tea.
And you, Gianluca Glazer, how are you this week?
I'm doing well.
I sent both of you an article from Newsarama that I thought was really kind of interesting. What's happening is a lot of the stores are not going to be returning things to DC as was originally thought would happen. Instead, they're struggling to get more issues. And I was curious to see if some of the stores near where you guys are got some of the same process. Now, I know, Ian, you didn't get to talk to the manager. I called several stores. They were very similar to what that article said, that they wish they could get more copies of even the lesser titles like Grifter and Resurrection Man and things like that. The book that people are talking the most about that they didn't expect to like was Animal Man, which again is Jeff Lemire, who has done a lot of interesting books, including Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. So now they're desperate to get their hands on second printings, and they're terrified that people will find them elsewhere before they get back to their own stores. So I found that interesting. Gianluca, did you get a chance to ask anybody what their experience is?
Yeah, I talked to a couple of stores, Meltdown Comics and Golden Apple. And, they were overall very pleased with the way the DC relaunch has been going. It's been pretty much a big hit. In Meltdown's cases, I know that they've been selling, like, a lot of stuff online. You know, a lot of people have been ordering stuff through there. Mm-hmm. They've been getting, like, a lot of calls and a lot of sales from people who their usual place purchasing comics has run out of the title. And so they've come over to that store, you know, to see if they have copies. So, and then just, you know, in terms of Golden Apple, I know, you know, Golden Apple has, you know, gotten like a lot of new people in general coming in and buying comics. So it's been pretty successful. Mm-hmm. I'm sure usually like a lot of retailers, they want to order conservative because the stuff's non-returnable. Mm-hmm. So they would like to do reorders and stuff like that. But in this case, I think they probably came in with healthy orders to begin with. And even those healthy orders may have been underestimated.
Well, it's interesting because the store that I called up in northeastern Pennsylvania where I grew up called Comics on the Green, and I've had Dave Romeo on this podcast before. He said that he's getting people who are calling to find out what time his store opens on Wednesday so they can make sure that they're there to get the books the moment he opens his door, which is, you know, apparently that's something he hasn't seen much of in the past. So I guess it's a sign he's running out of books. Some of them are literally gone and by the end of the day. And there's a lot of stores I know are like that. When I called three stores, and all three of them said, look, we can only talk with you for a minute. There's a lot of people in here. That is something I'm sure they're all very happy about. If you've got a lot of people browsing, at least, coming into your store, there's much more likelihood of them actually buying things. So it's actually working out pretty well for them. This is coming off pretty well. I mean, any impressions, Ian? What's kind of your impression of how this is going?
Well, you know, I rang my comic store this afternoon. As I said, I wasn't able to speak to the manager, but then again, it is a work day. So I should imagine the store wouldn't have had too many people in there at the time that I rang. But when I asked whether they had Suicide Squad, they happened to have one issue left, and that's mine. Uh-huh. But it was only one issue.
Suicide Squad is not one of those books I think that would be a massive seller. And yet that experience is what's happening with all the books. And I find that interesting. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the reason I've got quite turned on Suicide Squad because I was reading up about it, and it seems to be a little bit like the Dirty Dozen. And I love the Dirty Dozen films, so yeah. Dirty Dozen with supervillains, you know, that just suits me right down to the ground.
Yeah, very good, very good. Okay, well, let's move into the news then. Ian, while we're talking with you, do you have any news that you want to bring up for comics?
Well, sticking on the 52 thing for a while, there's been quite a bit of controversy to do with the new Wonder Woman book by Brian Azzarello and with art by Cliff Chiang. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's been quite a bit of criticism, and just last week, Dan Didio, while being interviewed by Comic Book Resources, kind of came to the defence of the new Wonder Woman book, and he cited the fact that there was lots of examples of Wonder Woman's character changing throughout the history of DC. And to make that point, he brought up Wonder Girl and Wonder Tot in the 1960s and the later Emma Peel look for the character as examples. He goes on, I mean, I think what they're doing with the new Wonder Woman is they're making a kind of like, I don't know, have you read the new Wonder Woman, Wayne?
It hasn't come out yet.
Well, basically it says that there are a lot of key things that we wanted to address in the new 52 Wonder Woman concept. You know, but the good part about the relaunch is that Brian Azzarello is addressing a lot of things at the core. There are people in her life, but she's never had the strong rogues gallery as existed with other heroes. and she's never really had that strong supporting cast. You have Steve Trevor, you have Etta Candy, you had a couple of the Amazons, but for a character who's had almost a 70-year history, that's not real big and well to draw from. So we're trying to fill that well now. Didio also went on to admit that he was disappointed in the JMS run of the character, which was titled Odyssey, which was finished off by Phil Hester, as you know. And he essentially said that he was pleased that Phil Hester was able to bring the character back on track for the reboot.
Mm-hmm. So, very true.
Make it that way, Will. But a lot of people are being hypocritical about Wonder Woman. And, as you just mentioned, it's not even out yet. So,
well, they took her pants off. And I mean their leggings off, their towel or pants. But when I got to San Diego, the first thing I noticed when I looked up at the screen in the DC panel was that she did not have the leggings any longer. Originally, she had long black pants, and I guess they decided that didn't look quite like Wonder Woman, so they've taken that off.
I'm looking at the artwork for it, and got to be honest with you, I don't like it. If the artwork on the cover is anything to go by, it's not really going to draw my eye at all.
Okay, any other news that you've got, Ian?
No, that was the only bit of comic book news I could find on the site that we ran last week. So
okay, Gianluca, what have you got?
A few things. ICV2 released the August sales numbers, the top 300 comics and graphic novels. August was up finally, you know, from last year's August 2010, which is good. Overall, there were some big sales. Obviously, you had Justice League number one. 200,000 copies sold. Mm-hmm. Next one was Flashpoint number 5. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Marvel like took like the rest of the top, the majority of the top 10. But when looking at the market share and, you know, dollars and units sold, the gap between Marvel and DC is shrinking again. Mm-hmm. Previous month in July, it was just under 10% mm-hmm. difference between the two for both sales and units. And this time it's like just under, you know, like a little bit under over 7% of the difference between the two companies. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting. It's kind of been shrinking like the last 3 months. So, you know, obviously, you know, September numbers, when those come out, that's the one with the big DC League relaunch and the 52 title. So it'll be interesting to see how big the market share is at this point, you know, and where DC is going to be ahead behind.
Mm-hmm. DC going to be ahead?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's the whole, you know, plan, and most certainly the way it's looking, especially with August. Yeah, it there's definitely going to be a switch to DC. You know, don't count Marvel out, though. Marvel still is doing very well. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the news is that Ultimate Spider-Man number 1 set new digital sales records mm-hmm. in its first week of release on mm-hmm. the iTunes app. Mm-hmm. This is the new Spider-Man that they have in Ultimate Spider-Man number 1. He's like a minority character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really a fan of Spider-Man, and with the Marvel stuff, I tend to go for the lesser known characters. You know, like Captain Britain. I love Captain Britain, but you know what I loved about Captain Britain was all the lesser known characters that Paul Cornell was able to bring into that, such as Spitfire and Captain Midlands, who wound up being a traitor and stuff like that. So that's why I go for the Marvel stuff. The only Marvel that I ever read and really liked, and this is from probably the 1980s, was it was a 1980s run of Punisher, and I really enjoyed that as a book and as a character. So,
any other news there, Gianluca?
Yeah, some interesting news here. Speaking of digital, Slave Labor Graphics (SLG) is doing a unique business model. From now on, they are no longer going to be printing serials, comics. They're going to be doing them all digital. And then they're going to, you know, either going to do the trade or graphic novel release of the book. They're going to do that in print. Mm-hmm. But I find that kind of very interesting. Mm-hmm.
That is a change.
Yeah. In DC news, Action Comics and Batgirl are getting third printings.
Wow.
We've yet to see the second printings, but the third printings are on the way. And
so my first edition's just gone up in value.
Of course. Yeah. It probably went up in value the week of release. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to board that. It's bagged, but it's not. Yeah, actually, it is boarded. It's bagged and boarded.
So I've talked previously on Wayne's Comics about how the whole second printing, third printing kind of work, kind of deal with dealing with Justice League and kind of the reason for doing that, money. Collectors.
Mm-hmm.
In other DC news, John Rosen, you know, the guy who does Zombie with, X-O-M-B-I.
Right.
Comics on Vertical. He's off of Static Shock. He was a co-writer on it.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, there's been like a few changes here and there to DC 52. But the biggest one was, John announcing that he wasn't going to be part of Static Shock, I guess starting with issue 2 and on. Yeah, it is kind of interesting, hopefully it may mean more of Zombie.
That would be nice.
You never know. Mm-hmm. In other news for conventions, New York Comic Con is coming soon,
mm-hmm.
in a few weeks, mid-October. DC's going to have some exclusive Arkham City hats promoting the video game. At the show.
Ooh, I want one of them. I've got the video game on pre-order, so.
Oh, cool. So, there's going to be a lot of cool guests and stuff. Also in October is going to be Long Beach, if you're local to LA, I guess, Long Beach Comic Con and Horror, blah, blah, blah. And they tagged on the horror title at the end. It's usually just been called Long Beach Comic Con, but it's going on its third year, Halloween weekend. And, check it out if you are an L.A. native or nearby in Anaheim or so on. Check it out, see what's going on. California seems to get, a lot of the conventions now, it seems. Or at least Southern California, in terms of WonderCon being in Anaheim next year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A little bit of sad news. Ziggy creator Tom Wilson Sr. has died.
Wow.
I just felt like mentioning that.
Mm, wow. Okay, well...
Is anybody still Ziggy?
I remember the strip. I haven't read it in a long, long time.
You too.
It seems bemusing a lot of comics creators, comics artists and that. We lost a lot in recent years. We lost Al Williamson, was it last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's just really sad. There's a lot of comics creators that just sort of seem to be leaving us.
Yeah, it's a tough time because, those people who are classics and have done wonderful things, it's just like on television, some of the people that we loved so much on television are leaving us, and it's hard to figure who's going to take their place. But I think there's a lot of new, more than ever, I'm optimistic about the upcoming talent. I think it's coming really well. There are a lot of people going to be doing good stuff, and I'm hopeful they'll, rise to the level of Jack Kirby's and...
Well, as I was saying to Wayne earlier, John Luker, I got a little present through my door this morning.
Oh, what did you get?
I got Tank Girl. It's a new Tank Girl track called, I think it's called Cariosa.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds fairly amusing. I'm going to give it a read. I'll probably review it in a few days' time on the website. But basically, here's what it says. The world's greatest postmodern punkette princess of pandemonium returns to spread mechanized mayhem. Humiliated live on TV by her quizzer show idol, Tank Girl sets out for bloody revenge on her one-time hero. But this will be no simple death. Oh no. It will be long and complicated and torturous and painful, planned down to the last second and every eventuality.
Definitely in vain of Tank Girl.
Yep. I'm looking forward to reading that, Sonic. It sounds really, really wicked.
Mm-hmm. It does sound really good. I like Titan.
Yeah. Since I'm making a habit that somebody reads the DC stuff that's coming out this week, I'm going to go ahead and read those real quickly. Batman number one, written by Scott Snyder, who will be on this podcast next week. Birds of Prey number one, Blue Beetle, and Captain Atom. It's ironic they come out the same week. I find that interesting. Catwoman number one, Green Lantern Corps number one. Both second and third printings of Justice League number one are going to be coming in, which I find a fascinating way to do it. I guess they want to make sure that people get copies of it so they can read it. They're not worried so much about who gets a second and who gets a third printing, I guess. Legion of Superheroes number one is out. And then one of the books I've been waiting for a long time and talked about many times is coming out finally. New Teen Titans Games hardcover by Wolfman and Perez. Looking forward to that. Nightwing number one, Red Hood and the Outlaws number one, Supergirl number one, Wonder Woman number one. There's the book you're waiting for, Ian. And Young Justice number eight. That book is out more than the episodes are out, so I'm glad to see that. So those are the ones that are out from DC. Anything that you're looking forward to, Gianluca?
Non-DC, I'm looking forward to Samurai's Blood number four from Image Comics. It's been continuing a really good miniseries that's been going on with Owen Wiseman and some really good artwork in the feudal style of Japan style by Nam Kim. It's just really good. I know Ben Arroyo Publishing releases it through Image, And of the three books they do, Marksman, Samurai's Blood, and Red Spike, I like Samurai's Blood the most so far.
Interesting. Anything else?
Nothing else, really. I mean, last week was like a really huge one with Super God by Warren Ellis, Trade. You had the Moriarty, you had the Blue Estate. Ferrone was another graphic novel that came out. And then you had Criminal come out. This coming week, it's just mostly, you know, some of the DC titles, especially Batman, and as well as and Samurai's Blood. Oh, speaking of Batman, you know, I've noticed this on the Midtown comic site, but I probably have seen the most expensive comic single variant issue ever on sale off of Midtown Comics. None of these number one, usually most of these, you know, number one relaunch books only have one cover. But Batman number one is different. Batman has a couple of has a variant and an incentive cover with it. But the incentive cover that they have at Midtown Comics by, I think it's Greg, how do you pronounce his name, the artist?
Capullo.
Greg Capullo. It's a incentive cover by Greg Capullo. $250.
Wow.
And then they do this kind of discount kind of thing, you know.
Cool.
Where it's only $213.
Wow.
Well, I've just found some interesting news for both Wayne and I. I think you probably like this, actually, Jungkook, if you can get hold of the first trade. Madam Samurai issue 2 is out.
Oh.
It came out towards the end of August, and it was launched at the British International Comic Con. I mean, we did run a story of it at Sci-Fi Pulse just prior, but it's like it seems so soft launched this year as opposed to the hype launch that you got last year.
I've got to go after that because this one of my stores gets it for me, but they have to order it through Dallas, which I don't understand. There must be a store there that gets overseas books a lot more, so I'm going to have to call them and ask them to go after it.
Well, I'm looking at the synopsis for Volume 2 now, and you can get it through Amazon, apparently. The cover work looks fantastic. You know, the artwork in this book, Jungkook, was absolutely fantastic. It's by, you can see the artwork is by David Hitchcock, who's got a very good grasp of Victorian sort of steampunk type of style. It's all in black and white, but it's really, really cool. And the story is written by Gary Young, who wrote the screenplay for that Michael Caine film a few years back. Can't remember the name of the Michael Caine film now. It's the one where he goes on Charles Bronson and kills all these vandals that killed his friend and generally vandalizing the area.
I don't know that one. I don't know either.
You know, I'll do a quick IMDb search.
Okay, well, while you do that, let me point out some books that, Ian, you might be interested in. There is Planet of the Apes number 6 should be out this week, as well as I talked with Mr. Harris earlier in this podcast, Spontaneous number 4 is out. So that'll be a great book to have. Also, there is Game of Thrones number 1 based on the original novel, instead of not the TV show. So that'll be an interesting thing to see. Kevin Smith's Bionic Man number 2 is also out this week, which is a great book. We both enjoyed. Did you get to read Bionic Man, Gianluca?
I guess that was part of the lost recording that we did. But yeah,
oh, okay.
I did read it very much. I enjoyed it very much, actually. More so than the other new licensed release, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I enjoyed Bionic Man as well. I've got that. It's definitely one that I'm going to continue to read. So both that and Planet of the Apes are out this week.
Yep.
I may as well wait till Friday before I ring my comic store and say, right, you can send me Bionic Man and all the rest of them. And the film, by the way, that I was referencing that Gary Young wrote the screenplay for was Harry Brown.
Ah, that's right.
An elderly serviceman and widower looks to avenge his best friend's murder by doling out his own form of justice.
Other than that, this week there is a couple of other little things. A Red Wing number 3 of 4, written by Jonathan Hickman, that's coming out this week, which I also like. There's also a comic based on the TV show Teen Wolf. It's called Teen Wolf Bite Me number 1 of 3.
That's what MTV can do. You know, they can bite me. You know, I'd rather them bite than make you watch that shit.
Oh, and
it's actually not bad. I've seen like the first episode of Teen Wolf.
I've seen the first 3 episodes, and I want 3 hours of my knife back.
Nice.
Well, there's one other comic I think we really ought to mention, and that is the Star Trek Ongoing is supposed to be coming out this week. That is from IDW. This is like reworking classic Trek episodes as if they were in the current continuity in the new movie. So that'll be out this week as well, too. So there's a lot of stuff coming out this week. Anything else that we should talk about before we move on?
Well, you know, before we move on, I don't know whether you mentioned this at the top of the hour, Wayne, but we didn't have an episode of SFP Now last week due to technical problems. We're trying to address them, and we should have the next episode hopefully rolled out by the end of the week.
Cool. So. Very good. Anything you want to mention too, Gianluca?
Really? Gosh. But yes, guys, we have another lost episode. Out there somewhere.
Yeah, it's happening.
So hopefully, I tried to bring up. I didn't bring up the comic conspiracies. Brief ban of Action Comics.
Yeah,
it wasn't worth bringing up again.
Yeah, I think we actually ran that one.
Basically,
you know, Mr. Morrison does gutter rolls all the time, so this is nothing new or special.
I'm just waiting for Grant Morrison to actually run.
Whatever you do, don't turn this guy on to Frank Miller. And All-Star Batman and Robin.
That's right.
I'm just waiting for Grant Morrison to write "twa" as one of his guttural sounds, and some readers sort of like write in and say, "Well, I didn't know Superman flew TWA."
And on that note, I think there's no better note than to end this section of news and previews. Thanks, guys. We'll talk with you next week.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
All right, let's take a look at this week's new 52 offerings. Number one on my list was Batman and Robin number one by Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. I really enjoyed the book. I'm fascinated that Damian Wayne still has no respect for his own natural father, or at least he has the same amount of respect as he did for Dick Grayson. He needs to be put in his place pretty quickly, I think. But anyway, I enjoyed the book very much. They had a really interesting change in the Batman dynamic regarding his parents, which I really hate to spoil. I think you'll like it. Green Lantern number one continues on the story by Jeff Johns. We get to see Sinestro. For some reason, the Green Ring has taken him back, and he ends up meeting people from his own Sinestro Corps. That was an interesting confrontation. And also, when he approaches somebody about needing money, that was a very funny thing for Hal Jordan. He's not perfect in this book by any means. Paul Cornell's Demon Knights number one is another great book. He knows how to spin a wonderful story. Some folks online didn't seem to like Red Lanterns, which I don't understand. But I like that book quite a lot. Suicide Squad is back, and it's got Harley Quinn. She happens to be dressed like she was during the Arkham Asylum video games. So I kind of like that. Very funny book. Very interesting and strange book. Mr. Terrific has a really weird last page. I was very surprised by what happened. And that same thing is true for Superboy number one. A big old surprise on the final page. Legion Lost still puzzles me as to why that came out ahead of the Legion of Superheroes. I guess they expect that people know who the Legion are. I'm not quite sure people will understand that, but we'll see. Frankenstein Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. was weird and in a good way. I thought that Resurrection Man was really interesting, very sci-fi. Deathstroke was very different. He's a very different character in this new 52 universe. The one I was the least impressed by was Grifter, and I never quite am sure where they're going with these things, but I'm not one to give up after the first book, so we'll continue on with that. Anyway, those are the books that came out this week. Let me mention a couple of others, by the way, really good ones. Gladstone's School for World Conquerors, number 5, which is a great book. I'm hoping to have an interview with the writer from that book before long. Criminal Last of the Innocent by Ed Brubaker, number 4, came out. Mystery Men, number 5, and Supreme Power from Marvel. Walter Koenig's Things to Come from Blue Water. And the ever-interesting Morning Glories, number 12, from Image. So those are the really good books that came out this week. And let's take a look in the local comic store and see what new and wonderful things have shown up this week. I haven't done this in a while, so really wanted to make sure I get to it. there are a couple of interesting things coming out. There's an AC/DC Monopoly game, believe it or not. There's a hardcover of The Art of Joe Kubert, which is always good. There are t-shirts with Batman Arkham City logos on them. Those people who enjoy the video games are going to want to get that. There's a Captain America bust bank for about $15. For the Whovians amongst us, there are t-shirts with three red Daleks on the front. There's also a character building Time of Angels mini set and the Day of the Daleks DVD. So those are good things. There's a Family Guy Yahtzee for those people who enjoy the animated show. There are G.I. Joe action figures that are out. There are Godzilla t-shirts, and you know what? It's always good to have a Godzilla t-shirt on if you get into trouble. There's also a Black Beauty model kit tin for the Green Hornet, which is about $50, believe it or not. Also, there's trading cards for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. There's also a Smiley Bone plush toy from the famous Jeff Smith Bone series. That's got to be worth getting. A Spider-Man bust bank. Spider-Man adult deluxe gloves. I guess we know who attends this. We don't get those for the children, I guess, because they cost about $10, $10 or $11. So that's something. There's Star Wars Chewbacca life-size stand-up for about $35. There are Class 1 fleet vehicles for Star Wars and an Heir to the Empire 20th Anniversary Edition hardcover. Then there's Boba Fett 9-inch talking plush, a Jawa 9-inch talking plush, which is about how big they are, I think, in real life, and Stormtrooper Supreme Edition costume, $1,300. You've got to be a really good Star Wars fan in order to get that. And of course, we got to end up with zombies. There's a Walking Dead decomposed zombie deluxe costume and a Walking Dead little girl zombie adult costumes. Both of those cost $55. Maybe if you can save up for it and get it in time for Halloween or before the show comes back on in the middle of October. Anyway, those are the things that are in your comic store this week. Thanks again for listening to Wayne's Comics. Next week, you're going to want to be sure to listen in because that's when my special interview with Scott Snyder, the writer behind Batman and Swamp Thing, and American Vampire and Severed will be here. And this one is an extra special one with Scott Snyder, so you're going to want to be sure to listen in. But until next time, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.